Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on Friday at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago. Is Danny Burke and you, have you recovered from last night? Are you still crying in your beer? It's all right if you are, man. That one was tough to watch, tough to take. The only buddy happy in the state of Nebraska is my little boy, and I promptly grounded his sorry ass when we got home. Why? Because he was smiling. We detailed his exploits wearing Spartan green last night. Hate on me. I'm the parent. Kind of like the coach. It's my fault. The buck stops here. Can join us this Friday if you like. If you're ice skating around Lincoln, dial us up 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865 along the Hail Varsity Radio Network affiliates. Give us a shout. You can email Chris at HailVarsity.com or just drop us a tweet. Give us a follow at Schmidt underscore radio at Danny Burke 5. And as always, at Hail Varsity. We're going to have a good mixture today. We'll have plenty of Nebraska thoughts as the opportunity was there. Nebraska could not find a way to get it done. There's no shame in their effort, more so in their execution. We'll get into Kansas City, man, and New England. That is going to be big. Can't wait for that. You'll hear it here in Lincoln and on many of our affiliates as well with the Westwood One broadcast. That is going to be dynamite. And we have a couple of different thoughts from folks in the know. First, we'll run down former Nebraska standout, I should say. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour. Russ Hochstein. Russ going to be with us. He played for New England, part of that seven layers of visa protection for Tom Brady, and won two Super Bowls with Brady. Russ, a great offensive lineman for Nebraska, the pride of Hardington Cedar Catholic. So Russ Hochstein with us at 5:25. Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury, going to be with us at 5:05. And then some Chiefs thoughts, some inside info with Blair Kirkhoff. What happens Sunday night, and what's the vibe like down in Chiefs Kingdom? Blair Kirkhoff in about 20 minutes. What happened last night to Nebraska basketball? It's pretty simple. It's been outlined, and it comes down to execution. It comes down to what you didn't do at the rim and what you didn't do from three-point land. And the biggest problem I have, if I'm a Nebraska fan right now, isn't the fact that a better team beat you, isn't the fact that almost 16,000 folks face painted in red feel dejected. It's not even that they lost. It's, to be quite frank, for them to be in the game and lose by six and somehow put a 7-1 run together the final minute and make it a four-point game. They had no business being within 10, let alone being there the final 30 seconds. The dagger was Winston's three ball at 4:21 to make it an eight-point game. The place emptied out, and they came and had beer with me and Danny. Nebraska was not ready for this moment. The moment got to them. I don't want to say they were jittery. I don't want to say they were uncertain. I think they were just thinking. I think they were thinking too much on offense, and I think a bunch of folks, and pick a senior, wanted to do all they could to make the offensive drought stop. So they decided, let's launch a three. Palmer tried to get to the rim, not often enough. I know he had 11 free throws, but there was a lot of settling. There was a lot of early three-point shot clock shots by Glenn, by Cope, by Palmer. And you can't have it. You just can't have it. You needed a very, I don't want to call it conservative, but you needed a patient possession every time. And you didn't get it because you chose not to. 3 minutes left in the first half. You're in the bonus. Minimal free throws. I don't think they took one. 5 minutes, you're in the bonus in the second half, and you're jacking threes. We'll hear from Tim Miles here coming up and Tom Izzo. But the moment got to him. Guys wanted to be the man, and they were unable to hit from downtown. It's not illegal to shoot threes. It's not. But Nebraska is not good against teams of substance defensively. Just look at their losses this year. Did they fall in love with the three? Yes. Did they make questionable decisions with some key possessions? Yeah. And you don't think it's a key possession at the time, but you have the basketball. How's Michigan State close that first half on you? You're up two, you blink, it's a 7-0 run. You get a stupid shot, you get a foul, and then you have a breakdown defensively. Very few breakdowns defensively, by the way. Nebraska played their ass off defensively. They were great. Nebraska wasn't afraid to go try and rebound the basketball. They were only minus four rebounding. They had 10 more second chance points. Nebraska did everything they could on the defensive side of the ball. They just didn't have an answer for Winston. He's phenomenal. But offensively, they want some possessions back. And here's my biggest issue, and Brian, we'll get to you in a minute. I'll shut up in a second. You're the coach. And Nebraska fans, you're either, hey, they played well against an elite team. It is what it is. You're going to lose to a better team. You can sit with that and be okay as a Nebraska basketball fan. The other side of it is Nebraska fans interrupt for after Tim Miles again because his team was garbage on offense. And it is his responsibility as head coach. You got to be better offensively in the half court. And against some good teams, you haven't been. You scored enough to win against Iowa and Maryland, okay? Your defense lets you down there. Against Texas Tech and Michigan State, you had no answer offensively. There was no motion. There was no ball movement. There was panic. And let's pass it around and play hot potato, and then somebody launch it like you're in the driveway, 3-2-1. Let's get the shot off before the clock expires. What are you doing as head coach? You can command these guys to drive to the rim or at least try and get looks. Better looks, patient looks, and you didn't. And I know you're against Michigan State, so you can't take your best players out. But there needs to be some sort of repercussion if guys and your seniors, for God's sake, guys have been in college basketball for 5 or 6 years. Between the mental strain they had with the moment of the game, the magnitude, the pucker factor, and then just deciding to settle. You need to knock that off as a coach. You need to get to them and say, please, for the love of God, take better shots. Get to the rim, get fouled. If you get it swatted, so what? Maybe the next time they'll foul you. Let's get to Brian real quick, and then Danny, you chime in here. Brian, go ahead. Thanks for waiting.
Got two quick things. I just think that, like, I'll be 30 in February, and I just started paying attention to Nebraska basketball more in the last 5 years. It was kind of one of those things, once football season ends, you're just like, okay, what now?
What's going to fill my time?
Yeah. Well, it just seems, they remind me every single year, they just need to learn how to win.
They have won, but this is a different animal. I think you're right, because this isn't a walk in the park, run-of-the-mill basketball team. How many teams can come in into that environment last night and walk out of there shooting like they did?
Your basketball blue bloods?
Right, and they are, year after year. That's the difference.
Yeah.
That's just it, and that's what you just got to kind of sit and take as a Nebraska fan. Okay, a really good team and a really good program who's done this before in a lot of gyms, they found a way last night. That's why they're great. That's why if they don't get to an Elite Eight, people are mad at Izzo.
Yep.
I mean, it just, listen, Nebraska's not where that is, where Michigan State's at, and they never have been, period.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's okay to take bad shots in a big game.
Yeah, I don't know. But on my second thing, I'm a Broncos fan, as you know, and I'm torn right now because on one hand, I absolutely despise Tom Brady, and on the other hand, I absolutely despise the Chiefs. What do I do this weekend?
You hope for a great ball game.
Curl up in a ball and cry that both teams are in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would talk to your boy Elway about getting a quarterback and quit the the revolving door of head coaches. Brian, thanks for calling, man. Appreciate it. And
see you later.
Just enjoy. Pour a drink and watch some great football. Wasn't that long ago you won a Super Bowl. Too many bad shots. Winston was the difference. Your crowd was amazing. You rebounded well enough to win. You played defense well enough to win. Your offense, part of it was Michigan State. Part of it was you. And Nebraska, they just are who they are. And against better teams this year, they have enough talent to win those games. They had enough talent to win last night. It just comes down to the effort was fine. It comes down to the execution. And it comes down to a little bit of basketball IQ and then a little bit of leadership, either from a player or the head coach, getting these guys not to be so caught up in the moment with a possession.
Mm-hmm.
And as a upperclassman, as a upper-class senior-laden team, you'd think there'd be a little bit more maturity with that. But that's not who they are. They're impulsive.
Right, and I mean, you nailed it. I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but their defense played amazingly. Look at this. I mean, turnovers, Michigan State had 15 compared to Nebraska's 9. If you do that on the road, typically you're not going to win that game. And like you said, the rebounds were close. Michigan State only had 4 more rebounds. Mm-hmm. And
they out-rebound people by about 12 to 13.
Right. If I told you that before last night that they would only out-rebound Nebraska by 4, you'd be impressed. Am I right?
Sure. I mean, it's not even, mm-hmm. but it worked.
Right.
It's good enough. It's the best rebounding effort you've had against a good team that should work you in the paint from a physicality standpoint all season.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of those rebounds were awful long misses from the threes from Michigan State. But it's just offensively, that was just such a poor performance. I mean, 22 of 67 from the field, that's just such an ugly number. 32%, and then 5 of 26 from 3, 19%. You just cannot win games. I don't care, home or away, you cannot win games like that. And like I tweeted, and you said it too, it was a miracle that they were even in that game. And then basically, you could kind of tell how the game was shifting at the end of that first half when Copeland had that stupid slap to the head to get that and one, which led to it being a 5-point lead. Right then, it's like,
these are your transfer seniors. And listen, this isn't pile on Palmer, pile on Glenn. They're good kids and they bust their butt. They're good players. But man, just be better. You've seen a ton of basketball. Don't make, again, the impulsive play.
Yeah, that's just lazy and dumb.
Roby's fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt bad for JPJ because it's not like he was just out there. He took some bad threes, but he tried to get to the rim. And the last 3 or 4 games he's tried to get to the rim, he's got a host of dudes waiting for him, and he's been rejected at the rim. And I don't know if he's getting the lift he needs. I think he's logging 7,000 minutes a game. The guy's tired. You got nothing from your bench. I mean, Borkart busted his butt in the first half, but he got into foul trouble. Michigan State's just incredible. They're just like Kansas. They're like Duke. They're like Carolina. They're like Arizona. And that's, you're just not going to knock out teams of that caliber, A, very often, and B, when you're going bird box from three-point land.
Mm-hmm. And our two guys, I mean, you said Glenn had to have a good game. He only had 8 points. I said Roby needed a double-double. He got 6 points and 7 rebounds. So, I mean, that's a big factor right there. Roby was taken out in crucial moments of that game right
shifted
away in that
momentum.
Second half. Absolutely. And Glenn had 2 big threes in that first half. Those were the only threes he had. And that's when Nebraska got the lead. But when Glenn went silent, so did the whole offense. And they, like you said, they had no answer on offense, no schemes, no motion. It was just going to ISO, maybe one pick. Then we wait till 2 seconds, chuck it up in the driveway. That's exactly what it was.
And that's on the coach. That's on the head coach. And it's the same movie you've seen as a Nebraska fan.
Right.
And that's why there's a segment of the population that's screaming about losing to number 6 last night. Not that you lost to number 6, but how you lost to 6, mm-hmm. because your offense was a freak show once again.
100%. And I mean, people, you know, yelled because of the Minnesota game or Maryland game, whichever it was. Oh, you know, Miles didn't go out there and miss so many free throws. Yeah, there's that argument, but there's also the point in games like last night where Miles controls what they run on offense. He controls how their players handle those offensive schemes and telling them whether to drive to the hoop, wait till the left. Like, that's all him, and that's what it's been since I've been here watching Miles, at least. He's never had a good offensive game plan.
No, he's let players go do their thing and freelance a little bit, or he'll get a screen, and he'll have a better dude 9 times out of 10 or most nights. And he'll go make a play if he's Pitchford or if he's Siobhan or mm-hmm. if he's if he's Pettaway, or if he's James Palmer Jr., or if he's Cope. I mean, Cope hit a big shot to cut it within a one-point game because Sparty got out to a 6-2 spurt. And then you had a moment, too, where Nebraska was right there. They got up. I mean, 22-20 was a point in the game, too. I thought, okay, they can build on this. They never led by more than four. But there was an out-of-bounds play where, guess what? Somebody got a screen for Thomas Allen. He was open. He caught it, and he shot it. Why not run some sets?
Right.
Run some sets and make Michigan State defend you. And out of a set, maybe you get – and I know they're trying to. It's not like they just didn't prep for this thing, but – the offense just can't look like that. And again, I don't know how much of a black and tan this is. One of my favorite drinks here. You got your Harp and your Guinness. Okay, I don't know how much of it was Sparty defensively. At least 50%, right? And at least 50% of it was Nebraska. Sparty had an effect on this offense, no doubt. But Nebraska didn't step up. The moment got to this team. And Michigan State got to this team. They're too good. The thing now is you learn from it, you don't let it get you down, and you go out and respond at Rutgers. Don't make it a two-game skid here. And be better next time when you go up to the Breslin Center. Blair Kirchhoff, up next to talk Chiefs-Patriots.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome.
A few minutes, Blair Kirchhoff with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Preview Kansas City and New England at Blair Kirchhoff on Twitter. And Blair, what's the buzz been around this week for the Chiefs and the Patriots? High anticipation, maybe a passing of the torch. Maybe that's too much hyperbole, but you got arguably the greatest in Brady and the next generation in Mahomes. How's the buzz been?
Yeah, I mean those are certainly part of the storylines that have played out nationally. I think, you know, here in Kansas City, it's just ever since the victory over the Colts on Saturday in the divisional round, that was such a sort of a release valve for Chiefs fans, because that was the Chiefs hadn't gotten past that round since 1993, and a lot of home playoff losses, a lot of misery among the fans with this team, especially in recent years. So getting past the Colts and doing it in somewhat convincing fashion, I think has kind of set the minds and hearts of Chiefs fans a little freer this week. And I don't sense an anxiety like I did the previous week. I think they're pretty, they feel pretty good about the Chiefs. And it's, it should be a great game. And all the things that you said about the other storylines, the phenom against the greatest of all time, and maybe the, I don't know if it's a passing of the torch, but certainly I think Mahomes has a chance to add himself to the small circle of great quarterbacks in the game. He needs postseason success to do that, and this is a great opportunity for him on Sunday.
What's your read on Mahomes? I mean, I watched him when he was at Tech, and I know you cover the SEC and the Big 12. Did we know what we were getting when it comes to fit and talent surrounding him, but also just his natural skill set and how smart a kid he is? I mean, did you anticipate when the Chiefs are trading up to get him at 10, this being the result? Did you think they were going to nail it like this?
Not at all. Absolutely not at all. We had preseason stories and conversations about what we expected in his first year as a starter. It's a second year, but first as a starter. Mm-hmm. And I was somewhere in the mid-20s for touchdown passes, and probably mid to low to mid-teens for interceptions. I think I had 25 and 13 for him this season, because I thought it was a transition, adjustment. First year NFL starter, and you just can't expect much. And even if he had 25 touchdown passes, that would be one of the better seasons in Chiefs history. Alex Smith never had as many. I think 26 was the most Alex Smith ever had as a Chiefs starter. And the team record is 30. So, if he got to the mid-20s, that'd be a heck of a first year for Patrick Mahomes. And even the Chiefs have admitted, Clark Hunt, the owner, and Brett Veach, the general manager, have said they had no idea what they were getting or what they got once the season started, and his his advanced everything, his approach to the game, his mechanics, everything. And it was the first two games, to be honest with you, that did it for me. They opened the season at the L.A. Chargers, and their second game is at Pittsburgh, and he throws a total of 10 touchdown passes in those games with no interceptions. And it's like, are you kidding me? What is this? We've never seen anything like it. And he hasn't slowed down since. And he's been beyond anything anybody could have expected here in Kansas City. And even the most ardent Texas Tech fan couldn't, even though he put up ridiculous numbers in Lubbock, couldn't have seen this type of success at the NFL level.
So with this offense, with the pieces here, spend a second here on the Chiefs scouting department when it comes to drafting and development and finding guys to fit what Reed and Bieniemy want to do. They have hit home runs, not just with pass rushers, but with offensive pieces. You lose a guy like your running back, Hunt.
Kareem Hunt.
Hunt's out, and okay, we got a couple of dudes that are electric fast and tough runners. I mean, they just plug and play unlike any team I've seen. It's incredible.
Yeah, that is a total credit to the scouting and development, and I don't think this is an organization that's drafted particularly well over the years. They've had their hits and misses like everybody else. There's no one draft that stands out and says, boy, that's an A-plus draft in the Andy Reid era. They've had nice ones, and you know, a lot of their top guys like Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, Tyreek Hill all came out of the draft. But they've also had to, you know, they've had to identify guys and pick up a Damian Williams at running back who was with Miami the previous 4 years, came to the Chiefs to add some depth to the running back position because they already had Kareem Hunt and Spencer Ware. And so Damian Williams spends the first half of the season plus on special teams only. He hardly gets on the field at running back. But then in a matter of a week, 8 days, they dismiss Kareem Hunt and Spencer Ware gets injured, and all of a sudden Damian Williams has to be the guy, and he's been very, very good. He's not as good as Kareem Hunt, but the drop off has been so small that it hasn't made a difference. He had a 100-yard rushing game against the Colts last week. He's been in the end zone several times. As with any backfield anymore in football, you got to be able to catch the ball, and he does a terrific job of that. It wasn't always a strong suit of his, but he does a really good job of that. So, it is a credit to what the Chiefs do. And that, for some teams, you lose a running back like Kareem Hunt, and that sinks you. That does you in, and it didn't for the Chiefs. And, another example, and this is just a smaller one, but, 2 years ago, they decide to cut a kicker, Cairo Santos, who was terrific. I mean, accurate and did everything they wanted. But he was coming to a point in his career where his contract was, he was off his rookie contract, was going to cost him more. So they cut him. They brought in Harrison Butker, and he's been very good for two years in a Chiefs uniform. So it's the Chiefs know how to play those games, and they've done a really nice job with it. And I think what Chiefs fans hope is, with the big business decisions that are coming up for this organization, with players like Dee Ford and Justin Houston, Tyreek Hill, what they'll do contract wise, some will have to restructure, and some they want to sign to big deals. I think like Tyreek Hill, you kind of trust the Chiefs to make the right moves here.
Blair Kirkhoff's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Blair Kirkhoff on Twitter, Kansas City Star. What's the biggest concern with New England when you look at what they can do defensively and what they would like to do offensively when you look at that matchup, that side of the ball?
I think it's Bill Belichick. I just think he will have some look, some unscouted look for the Chiefs, and he will goad Patrick Mahomes into a possible interception. He did that during the regular season. There will just be some look that he'll show that'll fool the Chiefs. He's just superb at this, absolutely superb. And I think that the Chiefs are the better football team. I know that they're playing at home. I know that the weather's not going to be an issue like we thought it might have been earlier in the week. So I think this comes down to Chiefs being better on both sides of the ball, not both sides of the ball, but just a better team with Belichick scheming on defense and Andy Reid scheming on offense. And you get two of the masters in the game. In that regard, Andy Reid will show the Patriots a formation or movement that they haven't seen, and Belichick will do the same thing on defense, and then may the better game plan win and better coach. And I think that if in this game turnovers are even, penalties are even, special teams are even, those that's kind of the hidden, the hidden moments in games that are beyond the obvious, I think the Chiefs end up winning the game. I just think they're simply the better team.
Blair Kirkhoff's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Belichick is so good. You look at all the rings he's been a part of and associated with, what he's done in New England, what he did for Parcells in New York, and he just kind of reloads and finds a way. And the game plan offensively against the Chargers was nothing extremely special. Let's just throw it to the running backs. Is that a sequel coming Sunday? Could Kansas City get exploited by White, by Burkhead out of the backfield? Is that an option you might see New England try and go after?
It is, but I think because we saw it last week, you're not going to see it as much this week.
And, gotcha.
And the Chiefs will have some kind of answer, whether it's to shadow that position, whether it's White or Burkhead with a linebacker, or Eric Berry's going to play this week, maybe with the safety. So I think that was a classic example of Chargers coach Anthony Lynn going against a Belichick coached team as a head coach for the first time. And I think that's what a coach like Belichick can do to first year, because this is Anthony Lynn's second year, but coaches that haven't gone up against Belichick. And, it makes a difference. And the Chargers were slow to make any adjustments. And it just cascaded on the Chargers. That was classic Patriots over Chargers in that game. Not to say that I saw it coming, but as it was unfolding, those are the things I was thinking about, that Belichick will just, chew up and spit out a coach that's going against him for the first time, especially in New England. So, that's one of the beauty of the Patriots. You see him destroy a team the way it did last week with the Chargers, and you're not going to see that again because you kind of overcompensate for it. The next opponent does, and the Patriots will have something, maybe Julian Edelman will go off for 14 catches, 150 yards, or Gronk will have his big game, or Sony Michel will run wild, or just something. It'll be something else. And to be honest with you, the Chiefs have been vulnerable against the run this year. I would not be surprised if that's what the Patriots try to do. Teams that have been successful against the Chiefs this year, like the Ravens and the Chargers, held time of possession advantages and had established a pretty solid running game. So I think that would be the first objective of the Patriots.
Blair, if Kansas City gets to the Super Bowl, I'll be hollering at you again, but who's the more favorable matchup, assume Sunday night goes Kansas City's way, the Rams or the Saints?
Obviously the Chiefs and the Rams played one of the crazier games
of the
college football season, and I think that the Chiefs wouldn't mind seeing that team again. But it's funny with the Saints. I thought for almost all the season they were the best team in the NFL, but they haven't been. It seems like they haven't been firing all cylinders here the last few weeks. They were kind of fortunate to beat the Steelers at home late in the regular season and got behind against two touchdowns to the Eagles and had to rally to win that game. And there's just something a little off about the Saints. I wouldn't be surprised if the Rams ended up winning that game. But as far as a favorable matchup, though, I'll tell you what, to be honest with you, I think there's a lot of people that wouldn't mind seeing a Saints-Chiefs Super Bowl. And, repeating the old versus new when Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes going against each other, and that might be a fun game.
Blair Kirkhoff with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Blair, thanks for the time. Enjoy Sunday.
Okay, Chris. Take care.
Good insight from Blair. We'll talk with Husker Patriot and Chief Russ Hochstein in less than an hour. Bill Dolman coming up. We'll have thoughts from Tim Miles and Tom Izzo next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Blair Kirkhoff, Russ Hochstein, Bill Dolman coming up. Moose has been on hold. Moose, you ice skating around? How you doing?
I am indeed ice skating around at the moment.
but that's just between jobs. That is what I do. So job one is over. Job two starts in an hour, but this gives me my hour of power to listen to Hail Varsity Radio.
You're the best, Moose. What'd you think last night? Did you throw things, or were you measured?
I was measured. It was my birthday, so my only thing I asked for my birthday was a win over Michigan State. Didn't get that. That's not the first time in my life I haven't gotten what I wanted for my birthday, so I'm old enough to be able to deal with that. I got a little bit of a take. I don't want it to be long-winded. I'll try and be succinct, but I got a couple things I want to say, if you'll bear with me.
Do it.
I have been accused of being the president of the Miles fan club. It's not the case. I've been supportive. That being said, he's not blameless. Neither are the players. I've had guys tell me with a straight face, and I think honestly believe it, that when we win, it's in spite of Miles, and when we lose, it's because of Miles. And if that's you out there, like, just be better. Last year, when we realized that we could put our, quote, lineup of death out there, this positionless lineup, and gain a competitive advantage, we're not, regardless of what guys think, we are not running a highly structured motion offense like Wisconsin. When we tipped off, we started playing this five-pop, five-out positionless system, which is predicated on a lot less structure, screens away, much more, you know, free-flowing basketball. Handoffs, high-lows, you know, attack through the nail for dribble penetration and kick out. When that's not happening, it looks like street ball. And when guys aren't executing, then the coach, like you said, has to get them to execute. Has to say, drive the ball. I don't care if you're not
Moose,
finishing.
You got to have a contingency.
Agreed. Agreed. You've got to have something that looks a little more structured when that's not working. But you've also got to hold those players accountable, like you were saying.
Yep.
And when we're not running that system or lack thereof in a free-flowing style where we're getting good shots, you know, somebody's got to be accountable, and that's on the head coach. Is he ever going to be the best X's and O's coach in the land? No. That's why you surround yourself with guys that are supposed to be. But, you know, again, coaches are always going to get way too much credit, except this guy, mm-hmm. or way too much blame when you lose. That's part of the gig. But the shooting performance, you can't put it all on shooting. You know, when they're in foul trouble at the end of the half, get to the rim. If James is getting frustrated because he's getting rejected a couple times, keep taking it. Eventually they're going to call a foul or you're going to get a kick out. You can't, at the beginning of a shot clock, launch up these YOLOs, especially as seniors, and expect that to work out for you. The beginning of the first half, if you just hold the ball for most of the 30 seconds a couple of those times, you're not down five at halftime.
No, you got to burn a little possession. Moose, God love you. Thanks for the phone call. Great takes, good insight. Absolutely. Be better. He says that to the Nebraska fans that are all over Miles. But be better as a coach. Be better as a group of guys. And you've got athletes. Let them win. And if you got someone that's D'ing you up, be able to go to a plan B. Have a plan B. And I think the Miles critics, that's their point. What the hell's the guy's plan B? And he took it last night. He was the one to say, "Yeah, man, that offense it just wasn't good enough."
I wasn't good with our shot selection overall. I thought that Michigan State did a good job, and you know they are long and athletic and strong. But you know when I quoted the numbers at the rim and stuff like that, we just couldn't. You know, we couldn't operate the way we needed to operate successfully to win the game. I thought defensively, when you look, there's, what, a minute 13 left and they're still at 60. You know, you shouldn't be at home down 10 when they're at 60. I wasn't very pleased with our offense in any way, shape, or form.
You and the rest of the state and the 16,000 at PBA, Let's talk about Michigan State for a second. And Cassius Winston's difference maker, he's 9 of 15 for 29 points and great from the line and hit monster threes and had assists. And he accounted for a ton of points. Everyone else was 15 of 40 for Michigan State. What did we say yesterday? Make someone else beat you. Make someone else team up and beat you. Can't be Winston, because he is going to, everything's going to get triggered from him. And Glenn did what he could, and then they switched, I think, Palmer over to him. Man, it just kind of reinforces how many teams can walk into PBA with three freshmen, absorb that environment, survive. That's my greatest takeaway. Shooting sucked. Defense was good. Energy and effort was there. Execution was not. But you just got, you got beat by a for real team. So let's move on to Monday. And we'll talk more about Rutgers Monday. Is this team going to be mentally tough enough to learn from last night, not sulk and be pissy, and prolong Thursday night into Monday night? The old, don't let it beat you twice. Well, that's a concern. Because is this team going to stabilize? And it's okay to lose four or five conference games to better teams, because there may be three, four, or five better teams. You're going to play Sparty twice. Now you got to go to their gym. You got Michigan. Maryland's pretty damn good right now. It's going to be white knuckling time. That's just what it is. More from Tim Miles and some of his overall takeaways. Tim Miles, this is a longer cut, but it's Miles hitting on a bunch of different topics from last night.
I thought we were solid. I didn't think we were great. I thought they got us. I thought Winston got away from us, and they got us in some transition, which is their MO. We were okay on the glass, not great, but I thought we were solid. Solid. And they had player. They got some breaks. You know what I mean? So Cassius does bank one in. Ward hits a shot clock three. He's attempted two in his career. And they both go in, you know? And you have to credit them. Those guys we were helping off of were 3 for 8 from three. You know, Goins, I think, hit one. He was involved in that. And so, you know, we just, you know, I think when we got down 7, you know, we lost heart a little bit for a few possessions to allow it to go to 11 or 12. And you just, you know, you can't, you know, I mean, and especially, you know, when the time is of the essence, you know, there's 3, 4, 5 minutes left. You just got to stay in there and stay with the plan.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Bill Dolman, Russ Hochstein coming up. It's just Dan tweets in, at what point is it okay to ask if this team's overhyped? All I've been hearing is this team is going to make a run in March, but it seems like all the breaks are against us. And I think you make your own breaks, okay? I think from a talent standpoint, Nebraska basketball was right there against Maryland. Somehow, despite missing 7 out of 10 shots, was right there against Sparty. Okay? You had Minnesota done. Tech just responded. You were up 9 on them, the first 5. Okay? You have talent. It's going to come down with this team here moving forward, their mentality. Okay? Are they going to suck it up and not sulk? And are they going to be able to be mentally tough when things go against them, like a loss at PBA? Is this team gonna be coached the right way instead of allowing guys to continue to shoot tough shots and bad shots? Are you going to fix it? Listen, if you feel like it and you catch and shoot and it just didn't go in, I get it. That's basketball. You need to take shots. And you need to get going. You need to get lathered up. Those same shots that some of the guys were taking last night went in against Creighton. Difference is you're playing a better team than Creighton defensively. So I'm not saying ban all three-point shots or ban all impulse decisions. I'm not saying that. But just dial it back for the good of the team. So coach better. And the other side of it is be coachable. If the game plan is to hold on to each possession, make the extra pass. Take the better shot. Get to the rim.
That's got to be moving broken, around more.
I'm a freaking broken record. I'm sorry. But that's where the dismay is coming from. Is, well, you only lost by six. How they were within six, dunno. But they were. And the woulda, coulda, shouldas. Tom, let's get you on here real quick, bud. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks a lot, Schmitty. I never did see the Texas Tech game, but...
it's okay.
Well, yeah, thank you. I heard it was a defensive lockdown after we got a 9-point lead on them.
Yep.
I saw last night's, of course. In honest opinion, do you think Tech's a better team than Michigan State, or have we just improved that much in, I don't know, 10 or 12 games?
Tech is... that's a great question. Tech's a better defensive team than Sparty. Thanks, Tom, for the call. Michigan State's a better... They're right there. They're right there. They're both going to be 2 to 3 seeds. The difference being is Michigan State may win the league.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan may have something to say about that. Kansas will have something to say about Tech. So they're right there. Tech is... got a couple of dudes. Sparty's more loaded.
Yeah, they're deep and they're better coached, experienced, too.
They're deep and they're talented, and they got Winston, who put a team on his back in a rugged environment. I'd give Sparty the edge. Sparty won in Lincoln. Tech won in Kansas City. Hour 2 coming up.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You're heading home at work. Ice skate carefully. It's brutal. Black ice. Think of the Nebraska-Colorado game in 96. Yeah, it isn't good. Go many miles below the speed limit if you're Lincoln, if you're out west here in us. Putt along if you're up in northeast Nebraska. Be careful. If you're back east, say hi to Bill Dolman, the pride of Fairbury. And NBC Sports is with us. Billy D, how are you?
Well, I'm bracing for maybe being stuck here. So I kind of understand what you're going through now, because I think it's what I may be going through later. And I'll just continue to call Stamper, Connecticut at home for the extended period.
What if I told you Glenn Watson had one assist in 37 minutes?
Well, wouldn't that be about one more three-pointer that Nebraska made?
Yeah, they didn't shoot well from downtown. Bill, you watch Nebraska. You know Nebraska. You big game. We laid out all the points in hour one. I thought the moment got to Nebraska. I thought they need to be coachable, but they also need to be coached when it comes to shot selection, despite being seniors and in college for a while. At Michigan State, man, they rolled into a tough environment and won, found a way. They're at a different level than most programs. So all of that being equal, what did you think of last night?
Well, first of all, Michigan State's pretty good. And they, you know, they've had Tom Izzo around forever. And I thought they looked like a Michigan State team from maybe not their glory years of national championships. And I'm not going back to Greg Kelser and whoever his teammate was. But you know, the Mateen Cleaves teams,
right.
You know, were pretty good.
The Flintstones.
It's so. I mean, it's so cliche to say that they're blue collar, but they are. I mean, that's just kind of the that's the makeup of Michigan State in comparison to their, you know, big brother school in Ann Arbor. And I thought that they played tough through the moment. They knew Nebraska was gearing for that game. You know, in a way that you go back to, everybody points to the high point of the Tim Miles era being that Wisconsin game a couple of years back. And I don't think in that game, looking back, that Wisconsin was probably prepared for the stage they were playing on, the fans, and all of that. And that was a benchmark moment for Nebraska basketball. And not many teams since then have been able to handle playing at Pinnacle Bank Arena. Michigan State is one of those who has the fortitude to do it. So I thought, for one, they just look tougher than Nebraska, and that's been and mentally tougher. One of my criticisms of Nebraska this season has been I don't think that they're necessarily, a physically tough team. I thought that they were in the game in that regard last night. I don't think they got pushed around and bullied. They were tough as bricks, and they shot bricks. And I think that's, about the best way to put it. And maybe, maybe mentally, the fact that Michigan State didn't wilt in the moment to the crowd, that probably, got to them. Nebraska, they stood up to Nebraska in Pinnacle Bank Arena. Not many teams can do that, and I don't think Nebraska was prepared for that kind of fight.
Bill, what's your take on the – because this is the criticism of Miles. He'll get good players – and if the free-flowing offense isn't working, then it's stand around and driveway, launch a three as your buddy's counting down 3-2-1. That's how
counting
it goes.
Down 3-2-1, it's counting down 24, 23, 22, launch.
That too. I mean, there's very little happy medium is my point. There's not sets a lot of times unless it's out of a timeout. It doesn't feel like there's a contingency if someone like Sparty is able to D up your best people.
I said this, for 2 or 3 weeks now. They play with an NBA mentality, but they don't have their college. They're a college team. They don't, shoot threes 8 hours a day or 18 hours a day, whatever the case might be. Nebraska is not equipped. Most college teams are not equipped to launch threes like that. I'd take up the tape on the court and just pretend there's no 3-point line and just, get back to shooting from, 1 foot, 5 foot, 10 foot, and just not allow 3-point shooting. Make some baskets or take some time. But in Nebraska went into, when Michigan State got up by 10, mm-hmm. They went on that 7-0 run, and then I think it got to be a 10-point lead. And there was still time left in the game, but there was a certain panic, and they looked like, we'll just come down and get the ball to Harden and let him cast up a three. And, I'm no big fan of James Harden's defensive game or necessarily his all-around game. But let's face it, that's the best offensive player on the planet right now. And I think those guys watch way too much. I think most high school players watch way too much NBA. And try to emulate that when it comes to their game. And that's what I saw. Michigan State was much more disciplined. Nebraska was casting up threes and missing. And after a while, I was like, just go in and make a 5-footer. But they're afraid of that shot.
Is that a game Tim Miles in year 7 should win?
Well, yeah, but they're playing one of the best teams in the country. I mean, Nebraska's in a very tough conference. I think this is the best the Big Ten has been since he's been there.
I think you're right.
Since Nebraska's been there. So losing by 6 at home to one of the 4 or 5 best teams in the country is, that's not an embarrassing loss. It may be the way you lost it. Nebraska could have won it. Let's put it that way. Nebraska could have won the game last night. Some discipline in shooting, believing that you could do it, but really the discipline and the shot making and the shot taking, that was probably the most disturbing thing last night, was just come down, launch a three, try to make that big shot, get the crowd in it. The crowd wanted to be in it, but the discipline of when to take the three and the confidence to make it. You know, I'm not surprised that Watson had one assist when everybody's launching shots like they were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's not like he's driving and dishing and being Pete Maravich or something. I mean, they're coming down and launching threes.
What's ahead for Nebraska? I mean, they've got Rutgers. Ohio State comes to town next Saturday, 11 o'clock tip. You have Wisconsin. You know, you have a lot of opportunity in front of you to get better and learn from this. How do you see this affecting Nebraska the rest of the way?
Well, I think Nebraska's in the tournament. That's going to happen. This is not last year's Big Ten Conference where you finish fourth and you don't get in. The league is going to get seven or eight, probably. Maybe not eight, but nevertheless, I mean, it's really good. So based on what Nebraska did in the non-conference, based on who they played in conference play, Nebraska is going to be in the tournament. People are still talking about, you know, that this is a team to buy. The problem for Nebraska going forward is, you know, you at this point, you got to finish conference play with a winning record and feel good about yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem that they're having is they continue to flirt with a disastrous seed. And that's the thing that's most troubling for me. And look, I don't watch a ton of college basketball other than Nebraska because I just think the game is really watered down. I mean, nothing really matters until you get to the tournament anymore. There's such undisciplined play all around. Nebraska is not the only team that's the victim of it. It's just who can play better undisciplined basketball better, you know? You're in a situation where, you know, are you going to end up playing a team like an Arizona that floats its way down the Pac-12 standings? Or are you going to play, you know, a team from the ACC that's pretty good? Or are you going to end up playing, you know, a really good AAC team like, you know, Houston or something like that in the first round? Nebraska's messing with its seeding, and I think that's the real danger here. Because I think with this team, anything less than a win in the tournament, and this is not going to be a good year. And this has the potential to be the best Nebraska basketball team ever, but it's not playing that way right now. And the way they're playing toward a seed that is going to put, you know, that stamp of being the first team to win in the tournament out of reach.
Bill Dolman's with us, NBC Sports, the pride of Fairbury, Hale Varsity Radio. At Bill Dolman's where you follow him on Twitter. Let's talk NFL. You fired up about Sunday. Saints, Rams, Zach Taylor and Ndamukong Suh. You have Drew Brees and, of course, the Chiefs and the Patriots in Arrowhead. I mean, it'll be fantastic. Are you leaning one way or the other? Who you like?
Here's the thing that's bothered me all year about the NFL is there has been such fawning over these high-scoring, offensive-minded, you know, games, heavy offense, and how this is the new NFL, and this is the direction the league is going. I'm thinking, let's put one less defensive player out there. Let the offenses play 11 on 10. If that's the direction you want to go for the league, and that Kansas City-LA game, what was it, 51-48 or something like that, and that this is the new NFL, I don't like that, and I still think you have to play defense to win. I think those teams are interesting. They're fun to watch, but if you're really going to win big, you still got to play defense. You know, none of those run and shoot teams of college football that I can recall won many national championships or conference championships for that matter. Any of those pass happy teams in the NFL for the most part that didn't rely on a running game or a good defense, they have rarely won a conference championship or a Super Bowl. So I think it's whoever's going to play the best and nastiest defense on Sunday. Those are the teams that are going to win. Now, Jared Goff hasn't played great of late, but their defense is fantastic, and they've got a defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips that has been on the big stage. He's won a Super Bowl most recently with Denver with a great quarterback and a pretty good defense. I would look for them, especially because they're at home. No, they're actually in New Orleans, aren't they?
They are.
I think that defense is going to win it for LA. I think their offense is not going to be what they were that high point when they beat Kansas City. And I think the Patriots are the Patriots. I don't think Bill Belichick cares a lick about, you know, Pat Mahomes and what he can do. I think it's about what they will do. I think Tom Brady will be Tom Brady. And I think that the Patriots and the Rams are going to be the ones that are going to win.
Bill Dolman with us, Hail Varsity Radio.
Buzzkill Kansas City, sorry.
Well, Russ Hochstein is coming up next, and he played for the Chiefs and the Patriots. He's plugged in, and it's all right, man. I mean, there's that fear. We talked to Blair Kirkhoff last hour. You've got kind of a rejuvenated fan base because they didn't puke it away against Indianapolis, but you still have Tom Brady rolling in, and it's on. I mean, it's going to be a big game. I've gotten a lot of feedback and commentary from Junior. Him and Mama went to the Nebraska-Michigan State game last night, and he's wearing lots of green. He likes Sparty. You're a role model of mine. You're a mentor of mine. And I need to know if you're also, like, just ashamed of me today for letting my son wear that green and go to PBA.
Me? Disappointed in you? Of course. Absolutely.
It's Friday, so...
No, it takes me... Look, but it's not surprising. Because it reminded me a little bit, you know, when I first saw your little leprechaun there in his green. I'm thinking, look, it reminded me of, gosh, what's it been, like 20 years ago?
Yeah.
When little Chris Schmidt decided he wanted to put on his big boy pants and dialed up the phone and called the Jim Rome show. And I don't remember what your take was. All I remember
is
that
none of us do. It was bad.
You hit the eject button like really, really quick, mm-hmm. right?
Like a shot clock shot.
Yeah, and I mean, you hit the eject button faster than Nebraska takes a three-pointer.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Rome says to you on national radio after you stumbled and stammered your way through your phone call, "It's all right, Chris. I don't blame you. I blame your parents."
Yep.
And I'm gonna lay the blame on the kid's parents last night.
Mm-hmm. He was happy.
And your wife's brilliant. So where's that leave us?
Child protective is where we're headed. is where we're going.
But look, I have high hopes. Look, I have high hopes. You have wonderful parents, great wife. Mm-hmm. You're you. But I have high hopes that this is just a phase, mm-hmm. and he'll grow out of it. And I'm sure, you know, that there'll come that time when he doesn't want to stand out so much and wants to be a part of the big red crowd. And we'll all be proud of you again, yes, relatively speaking.
Bill Dolman, the Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports. Bill, got about a minute here. What's coming up with you, man? What's happening out in Connecticut?
Well, I got to tell you, right now, as we speak, the Biathlon World Cup is on NBCSN, one of the most fascinating sports that I've ever had the chance to cover in my career. So I'm out here covering biathlon and cross country. Six shows over the next couple of days, and thoroughly enjoying being part of the NBC sports family and bringing Olympic sports to people more than just every 2 and 4 years. So it's a lot of fun, and it's the most intense and grueling sport that I've ever watched. But people catch the replay right now of the biathlon relay from Ruhpolding, Germany, right now.
There's a
NBC,
Schmidt.
Yes,
there's a Schmidt in the crowd. Bill, we'll catch up with you next Friday, bud. Thanks for jumping on, and thanks for the talking, too. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. Go Big Red.
There he is. Bill Dolman. The old Jim Rohn phone call, the summer of 98. Thank God that's been burnt. Russ Hochstein, standout Husker, world champ with the Patriots, former Chief. He's next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in a two-time Super Bowl champ. He was an all-Big 12 performer with Nebraska football. And we say hi to Russ Hochstein. Russ, how you doing, man? It's been a while.
It's great. How have you been?
I'm good. I am good. You've got a special interest this weekend between two teams you played for. Wow, down in Arrowhead, New England and Kansas City. What do you think here? Weather? I mean, it's offensive lineman weather this weekend, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's that time of year, as we all know, in the playoffs. And weather obviously plays a little bit of a factor in games. And when you're a lineman, you got to love these days. Even though you might think it's pretty miserable playing in it, but as a lineman, you know you're probably going to get the ball or to block for the running game a lot more than you normally do if you cannot throw down the field and weather permits. Definitely as a lineman, it's your day.
2002 to 2008, two championships with New England, part of that offensive line that protected Tom Brady. Russ, what were your experiences like playing with New England and being a part of this dynasty?
Well, absolutely. This is a special time of year. And, you know, it doesn't matter what level of sports you play in. When you get to the postseason, everything, intensity, focus, all gets ramped up. And it truly is. If you love to compete, this is the time of year you absolutely love. I mean, it's just, it's a no-brainer. It's everything's on the line. You win or you go home the next day. And absolutely loved it. And I was a part of it here in New England for my years here. You can't say enough about the time, the preparation, all that work you put in over the beginning part of the year to help you get you to where you are now. And now it's time to lay it all out there. And it's hard to say that, I should say, in professional sports, because no matter what week it is, you're laying it all out there. But the playoffs definitely has an intensity about it. You hit harder. Decisions are made. You got to be quicker on your feet and be ready to roll.
Russ Hochstein's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, standout Nebraska football player and a great career in the NFL. You spent time in championships in New England. You spent time in Denver. You ended your career in Kansas City. You live back in New England, and have you followed New England this year? And if so, did you ever let your mind creep into that question mark if this was the end of this Patriot run?
Well, absolutely. Living in New England, I still follow them probably the most because I have the most coverage here given to me,
sure.
Whether it be on the radio or TV. I absolutely still follow Kansas City and the entire league as well. Once I got away from playing football, I think I became even a worse fanatic about the NFL. It was such a big part of my life, and now being done and retired out of the league, I can't get enough of it. So I watch the whole league, and I watch it with great interest. And absolutely, I think we'd all be crazy to think that eventually Tom Brady will retire or Bill Belichick will retire. I don't think it's here quite yet. I think there's some years left. You know, and obviously you've seen the rise of Kansas City. They have a great young quarterback and a very solid team from top to bottom. And they're well coached as well. So this will be a great game. And to talk about the end of the dynasty, I don't think it's quite here yet. So I'd be crazy to keep talking about it.
I don't think it is either. They being New England, they've not been as dominant. I mean, you're used to seeing, and you were on those teams that the sky's falling when you went 14-2, just like the sky is falling, you went 12-1 at Nebraska, right? I mean, the expectations are that high. 11-5, still great, okay? And many folks counted them out against the Chargers, and they destroyed the Chargers last weekend. And this one's also predicted to be a tight ball game. What is it about Belichick and Brady Sunday that could help them prevail? I know they're talented. I know they've been there. But just when you look at Andy Reid and you look at what they're facing, what could give New England an advantage on Sunday?
Well, I think you kind of touched on it. I think experience plays a huge role in it. I also think, let alone just the experience as a whole, what New England has done in the past, experience in extremely cold weather games, different weather, different climates. If you've been in the postseason, and I know going back to even when I was here, we played in a lot of very cold games, a lot of miserable, rainy, snow, whatever weather it may be, and we did that in the postseason. And that kind of adds another layer to what you have to prepare for. Because you got to remember, if it is cold and it's extremely cold, the ball doesn't fly as well as it used to. So just take the kicking game, for instance. You come down the field. You know, normally you can kick a 40, 45-yarder and you're not fearful of missing a kick. Well, when you get to colder weather games, you know, that line might move up 10 yards. So offensively, you're kind of in between the punt range and the field goal range. So now, you know, a 4th-and-2 might be something you're more willing to go out and get. and you might be willing to call that and say, listen, we're going to keep our offense on the field. We're going to try and convert on this 4th-and-2 because we're kind of in between both ranges. Instead, it used to be, oh, just bring out the field goal kicker and we'll kick the field goal and move on to the next series. But now you look at it and say, listen, now this 4th-and-2 is more important. We need to convert and move the chains forward so we can add another 10 yards to secure a better field goal for us. And the punt game can be the same thing. You know, a punter in cold weather, that ball's not going to hang as long. It's going to come down. You need to get coverage down the field better and blanket the returner better. Not, as you know, they have a great returner in Tyreek Hill, and his talent is unbelievable. So those things definitely play a huge factor in games like this. And Bill and Brady and that whole bunch have been through it a lot. So if there is an advantage in that, I would probably give it to them. You know, and I know talking about your previous point of maybe this isn't the greatest New England team we've seen, and maybe it isn't. Obviously, we won't know until the scoreboard winds down. But I would say, you know, there's years you may not have the best talent on the field. But it doesn't mean you can't win. And in football, as you know, is the ultimate team sport, and you need all 11 guys on each unit to make it happen. So it's going to be a fun one, I believe. I think it's going to be close, and it'll be exciting.
Russ Hochstein, standout Husker and part of the New England Patriots dynasty, also a Kansas City Chief with us here as we're talking and getting ready for the AFC Championship. Russ, you played all spots on the offensive line. You've started at center, you've started at guard, you've started at tackle, you've started at tight end, and you played on the biggest stages. What is it like for an offensive lineman to deal with Justin Houston, Chris Jones, D. Ford, that pass rush that Kansas City has? I mean, that's where Kansas City is wanting to kind of make their money defensively on Sunday.
Oh, absolutely. And those guys are extremely talented. I actually was on the team when Justin came in. He's a very good player. And I know D. Ford, I've been watching along the way, has played extremely well. And I'll tell you what, home field advantage with crowd noise can make a big difference as well. And if the Kansas City defense can keep Brady and that offense from converting or getting into third and short, and where they can pin their ears back and rush him, I think the advantage goes to them. That's a bad situation in Kansas City with the crowd and the loud noise that they'll be putting out. And I think that's a plus and kind of a mark for Kansas City in this game. If the crowd's into it and it's a tight game and they can get him into third and long where they know it's going to be a pass and they can pin their ears back and come, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch those guys. And as an offensive lineman on the other end of that, you hate that situation because it's going to be loud, it's tough to communicate, and you need to make sure you get the line calls the way you want them and slide your defense or your offense in either direction, whether you need to help on a Houston or a Ford or you keep a tight end in to chip or a back to chip. Those are all communication things that can happen at the line, and when it's loud, it's tougher to do it.
Russ, what led you to Kansas City, man, to end your career? What was it like down at Arrowhead for you?
Well, Romeo Crennel actually led me there. You know, I was towards the latter part of my career, and I had went through a training camp to stay in the league with the Arizona Cardinals, and happened to have some joint practices. And I think Romeo had said hi to me, and so he knew I was out, still in shape and ready to play ball. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for me for Arizona. And I went home, and a week later, he called me. They had a couple injuries up front on their offensive line, and they brought me into Kansas City to help them. And I absolutely loved my experience there. It's a great ownership, a lot like New England, a lot like Denver. Great owners, good organizations, great fan bases. And obviously growing up in Nebraska, I rooted for Kansas City as a kid a lot, and got to go down to Arrowhead as a fan as a young kid. So it kind of was fun to be able to go there, and I know it was the end of my career, and to kind of finish my career there was a lot of fun.
Russ Hochstein's with us on Hail Varsity. Now, last thought here, Scott Frost is back in town. Nebraska finished extremely strong this season, and the lines of scrimmage are an emphasis, Russ. We haven't talked for a while. What do you think of how Nebraska ended the year? And do you like the direction things are going with Coach Frost and company?
Absolutely. I'm a little biased, as you know. I played with Scott and over there in '97 when we won the national title, and I was a part of the same program and probably his, I don't know, I don't want to speak for him, but probably the foundation that got him into coaching, mm-hmm. Of what Coach Osborne had taught us and instilled in all of us. But I have, I watched Nebraska very closely this year, and I know it was rough early in the year, but every week it seemed like there was a gradual improvement in certain on different units within the team itself, whether that be defense, special teams, or offense. And slowly but surely, they got better and better and better. And, you know, obviously they had a good win against Michigan State towards the end. I know we didn't get to a bowl this year. But I am excited, and I'm also excited on the other end of that, on the recruiting side with, I believe there's been an emphasis put on kind of rebuilding the walk-on program getting and building some depth within the system itself. Which is only going to be an added plus to Nebraska and help them compete as they go forward in the next few years. So I am very excited and can't wait for the next year, and I think they got a very good young talented quarterback as well and some good skill players. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Russ Hochstein with us here. Now, before we go, give me a prediction Sunday, or are you staying away from that?
I would say not that I know what betting is, but I've heard the over-unders came down to 55.
Uh-huh.
and everyone says it's too good to be true that you get to take the under. I'm going to take the under and say it's below. They're going to score less than 55 points. Either team can win this, and I would say it's going to be within a field goal of each other.
So Russ says 3 points, take the under for entertainment purposes only, of course. Russ Hochstein. Russ, this was fun. We'll do it again. Thanks for a few minutes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And hopefully I'll talk to you as we get into the Super Bowl week. Hopefully one of these two teams is in it. It'll be a lot of fun.
There he is, Russ Hochstein, great Husker and New England Patriot, Kansas City Chief. Friday forecast is coming up. We'll say who wins that AFC-NFC tilt.
Now live from the ESPN Lincoln Studios, it's Hail Varsity.
I know what that means.
With Chris Schmidt and Danny Burke.
Welcome back to it. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. And we'll get into the Friday forecast here in a moment. Hopefully you are buckled up. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. What saves you from flying out of your vehicle? What do you want to stop your forward momentum? A seatbelt or the windshield? And seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down. This applies to the driver's seat, the passenger seat, or the back seat. Buckle up now. Click it or ticket, a message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Tomorrow, weekend edition of Hail Varsity gets rolling 7 to 9. In Lincoln, anyway, you have a number of the high school ball games postponed. We are supposed to do North Star and East. That has been pushed back to next week. So We'll attack that then. Let's get you the Friday forecast. We'll start off with some NFL. Where are we at, Danny? What's the count? Steak and a beer, me? Is that the advantage?
Yeah, I think you are.
Well, the last couple weeks, right?
Yeah. Well, we've been tying for most weeks up until this past week. I think you're either up one or two on me.
Okay.
I
think so we'll go double or nothing.
Well, if you count the Michigan State game, then you're up two, I think.
Yeah,
overall.
So we'll go double or nothing.
All right. Sounds good.
The Pride of Chicago and his friends in Vegas. Let's start off with New England and Kansas City. Over-unders on this thing, is it 60?
57. It's been 57 pretty much the whole week.
You know, I think it's going to be under. I think the point total won't be anything near what it was in Patriot land last, week six, week seven on Monday night. This is nuts. I'm going to go with New England. Give me the points. Give me the Patriots. Give me Tom Brady back to the Super Bowl. I do not want this.
Oh, I thought we were on Rams-Saints. Sorry, the over-under is 56.5 for this game.
Yeah.
This one's been going back and forth all week because of the weather.
Right.
Carry on, my bad.
No, it's all good. I'm going to take, give me the unders. Give me the Patriots.
Okay.
And give me Belichick over Reed. It's as simple as that.
All right. Well, I will disagree with you here. I'm going to ride the Chiefs. This game is the one that's been...
I'll give you a score if you want.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hear a score.
You said 56.5?
Mm-hmm.
Guess I'm going to go 28-24 New England outright.
28-24 New England. Okay. Well, yeah, so this game's been causing me a lot of problems. Been going back and forth and back and forth all week. There's usually one or two games that do it for me, and this is the one. I was leaning Chiefs, and then I was thinking, the Patriots are the Patriots. Then they started embracing that underdog role, and I think that is just the most ridiculous thing of all time. This is their eighth straight AFC Championship game. Get the hell out of here with that talk, Edelman. I am riding the Chiefs this weekend, and I also have been on the under, although I'm not as confident anymore because it was supposed to be sub-zero temps, but I think it's improved a lot more.
A warm front.
Yeah, so I will still lean under on the game. Give me the Chiefs. You know what? I will take your same. You said 28-24, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that for the Chiefs.
Okay.
I will do that for the Kansas City Chiefs, and they will go on to the Super Bowl. And Andy Reid will finally defeat Bill Belichick in a big game.
All right, if you say so. You have the Saints, you have the Rams, you have the Saints -3.5. New Orleans has been shaky. New Orleans and their run defense will not be the same because they've got some injuries. And Ndamukong Suh will flip the switch yet again with that Rams defense. It'll be Fat Man Anderson. It'll be Gurley. It'll be the Rams heading to the Super Bowl. And give me the Rams 27-24.
So another under, huh?
In
the dome.
You thought you were going to get a lot of points last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Philly stymied that. 20-14 is really low scoring for what New Orleans usually does. So I'm going to go with the Rams. So I'll have a New England and Los Angeles Rams Super Bowl.
Okay.
And my heart, maybe more so than my head, I want Zach Taylor. I want Ndamukong Suh to get that ring.
Fair enough. As you recall, I picked the Rams to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the season. I'm going to back away from that because I took the Saints about a month ago, and I'm going to still ride on the Saints here. And you can get the line at 3 in various places, but we'll go with 3.5 for the sake of it. I'm taking the Saints to win and cover. AFC-NFC championship games over the last 5 seasons. Home team straight up 10-0 against the spread 8-2. Those are some good stats to get behind Schmitty. And the Rams are 0-3 straight up and against the spread in their last 3 games on the road against the Saints with an average losing margin of 18 points. I also like the over in this game. You know, the Saints struggled against the Eagles. They had a couple weeks off. They're going to bounce back. Drew Brees is going to do it. Give me the Saints 35-28. Yeah, that's I like that.
I just think a motivated Ndamukong Suh is a very dangerous thing. Maryland's at Ohio State tonight. Maryland is...
I believe that game has already started.
Okay, so let's take it off the board. Really, who gives a damn? I don't. I'm more interested in Sparty in Maryland. That's coming up here on the way. How about Saturday? Does Michigan stub their toe at Wisconsin? Wisconsin needs a win, something fierce. They've been reeling. Do you have a number on Wisconsin and Michigan?
Yeah, so Wisconsin, or no, it looks like Michigan is a 2-point favorite on the road against the Badgers. And, I'm going to ride with Michigan until they prove me otherwise. Wisconsin, they just dropped to Purdue at home like the other week or whatever. I was watching that game, so I'm liking Michigan to win and cover.
What's the over-under?
126.5, very low scoring.
I think so. Give me Michigan 65-60, I agree with you.
I'll go Michigan 68-63.
Indiana's at Purdue, rivalry ball game. Indiana's reeling. This would be their fourth straight loss. What's the line?
I think it's, Purdue -7, over under 143.5.
I think Purdue wins this thing by about 10. Give me 75-65.
I think, I don't know, well, all right. You know what? I'll take Purdue to cover as well, but barely by 8. I'll take Purdue 80-72.
Okay.
And then last one, we got Duke and Virginia. Duke, a 2-point favorite, over under 140.5. This is going to be a hell of a game.
Yeah, Virginia wears me out because they're just boring to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Maybe they're a little better this year. Duke doesn't go 0-2 in a week. It's just 2.
They do. Watch out for Coach K's health.
That's a steal. 2 points is it? Because Duke's hosting, right? It's at Cameron. I think Duke wins this thing by at least five. Give me Duke 75-70.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to agree with you here again. I just don't think with this talent, Duke is going to let that game slide. After losing to Syracuse at home, I don't think so. I'm going to go Duke. I think it's going to go well, Virginia plays great defense, but I'll still take the over. Give me Duke 83-77 over Virginia.
You know what? You know what the loss to Syracuse was? That was a young, immature team that's ultra-talented looking ahead to this game.
Absolutely.
So there's their come to Jesus, wake up. And should be a good weekend of basketball. We'll wind down a Friday for you with Hail Varsity Radio. Friday forecast. And don't forget, Danny Burke is taking to ESPNLincoln.com with his blog and predictions. We'll say goodbye next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you one final time on a Friday weekend edition's coming up with Hail Varsity. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, Pride of Chicago. Missed the show, can log on HailVarsity.com or get to iTunes. Take us with. Be safe out there if you're in Lincoln. If you're out in western Nebraska or northeast Nebraska, just be safe and cautious this weekend and the next 12 to 24 hours with all the winter weather, as icy as it is. And you're home for the NFL this weekend in Lincoln, as well as both NFC and AFC championship games for you. That'll be just incredible. I want to leave you with a couple of comments from Tom Izzo. One on the Nebraska environment. Two, on this Nebraska basketball team. Here's Coach Izzo. Good dude, great coach, fabulous team last night, and his guys were wowed.
You know, those guys, like I told them, I said, this will be one of the best places you'll ever play in. And when it got loud in the locker room, I told them after, I said, how did you think that was, and were you ready for that kind of intensity on the road?
It's always teaching, man. He's always teaching. He's trying to prepare his guys. Get ready. And you had the senior leader deliver the rest of the squad. And you had a bunch of freshmen say, oh, damn, we found a way in that place against that team, against that defense, to win and stay unbeaten in Big Ten play. Here's Izzo on Nebraska and Coach Miles and this year's squad.
I'm telling you, we were paranoid of this game. This is a good team. They didn't make shots tonight. And I've done that against Syracuse last year with a much better team. And it just, those things happen sometimes. But Tim's got a great team. That's going to be an NCAA tournament team. And I hope they just keep on winning now.
So he's very complimentary. And usually you have a coach say, hey, I want this team to do well. I want this coach to do well. Because you kick their ass. You want somebody around you can beat. That's not been the case with Izzo in Nebraska. I mean, he has a better record against him, and he's over 500, but it's not like Nebraska hasn't stung him a couple times. Email in from Brent. Chris, what's your opinion? What does Miles have to do to stick around, make the tourney, win a game in the tourney, what's your take? Thanks, keep up the great work. I'm not to the hiring extension point yet. It's on a lot of our minds. It's in the back of my mind because you got a season to work out. And to stick around, I mean, just think about it from Bill Moose's standpoint. What's going to make me feel that this is a long-term success? What's my plan like? What's my plan for consistency? What's my plan for being a good program year in and year out without the demand of a tournament every year or every other year? I think 3 out of 5 years, you're knocking on that door. I think that's fair for Nebraska basketball. Has that happened here? No. Are things getting figured out where they can be more consistent? What's your plan? Grad transfer? That's your niche. Has it worked out for you? You've had some hits and misses. The case that's being made right now is you had a team that was tournament worthy last year, didn't knock it out. You have a tournament team this year, probably get in unless you collapse, and then it'll answer itself. And you had a tournament team in year two, but you underachieved in year three. I think you win, and you'll get that contract extension. The offer may not be what you want financially. Hey, we'll talk to you tomorrow at 7. Thanks.